Winona Forever is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For more podcasts about movies and nostalgia, head on over to cageclub.me. Hi, I'm Lindsay Gibb.
And I'm Rekha Tulsaram.
And this is Winona Forever.
Here today with a special episode. We are interviewing Nigel Goodall, who has written a Winona Ryder biography published in 1998. Hello.
Hi, Nigel.
Hi, guys. How are you? All right?
Not bad. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
So I guess to start, how did you find out about our podcast?
I think I just found it online one time, and I thought that was what I was listening to was very interesting on some of the movies that you were highlighting. Mm-hmm. And some of those movies were my favorite, so it was kind of interesting to listen to what other people thought, as well as what I thought. So that's how I really came across you.
Okay.
I think it was either on Facebook or one of those kind of social media things.
So which ones you were saying? Which ones are your favorites?
Which of her earlier?
That's a difficult question. But I have actually been thinking about that because I thought you might ask me that. So Welcome Home, Roxy Carmichael certainly has to be one of my favorites.
Nice.
Heathers is another. Bram Stoker's Dracula, all the early movies as well. Edward Scissorhands, Mermaids, that whole period that actually I wrote about in the book of her early 90s movies are certainly my favourites, and was really, I think, the story of why I decided to write a book. I went to see How to Make an American Quilt when it was being shown in 1995, I think it was, as part of the 100th year of cinema in the UK. So they were showing all these films all day over a whole weekend, and you'd pay £1 just to go and see any of the movies. They had classic movies like Casablanca. They had new releases How to Make an American Quilt was shown. Me and my daughter went to see it, and when we left the cinema, I said to my daughter, I just have to write a book about her. And that's how it really started, because I had followed her since Lucas anyway.
Right.
And she was just so extraordinary and different, and I'd never seen an actress who was actually quite so natural as she was. And when I saw How to Make an American Quilt, I just knew then, okay, the time has arrived for me to actually write a book.
Cool. Yeah. That was one of the things we were super interested in, is how you kind of came to her. So it was that particular film that sort of did it led to that one.
I got to write about her. Yeah.
Yeah, that clicked. It was very strange because I think 2 weeks before that, or 2 weeks after, should I say, I was speaking to a publisher at Virgin Books in the UK. Mm-hmm. She was the commissioning editor. And I went, I was actually trying to sell a book on Olivia Newton-John at that point. And she said that, no, not really interested, because they thought Olivia was not really cool enough or hip enough. And then she said, but we would be interested in someone like, say, Winona Ryder. And when she said those words, I said, well, I'm your man. And then she took it to various editorial meetings. She couldn't actually get it through editorial meeting. With publishing, where an editor might like your book and think it's, a goer, then when they take it to editorial meetings, it's usually the sales guys that say yay or nay. And if they say no, then that's it. So what happened then was I started touting it around every publisher. And it was quite amazing to me because so many publishers actually turned it down. And it was, I think it went on for 8 months. The first edition of the book that never actually happened, but I wrote it, was for a publisher called Smith Griffin. And 8 months after them looking at the proposal and my various, you know, sample chapters, they wanted Winona to authorize it. And we tried to get Winona to authorize it, but her publicist didn't, you know, told us it was totally inappropriate to write about her, which I thought was odd anyway. So
inappropriate.
It was inappropriate. And they literally told me to, you know, kind of drop the project.
Right.
Then kind of 8 months on from that, Robert Smith, who owns Smith Griffin, he's now a literary agent. He actually phoned me and said, would you be interested in doing Winona as an unauthorized biography? And he gave me the weekend to literally make the decision if I wanted to do it with under his offer and under his terms. And because I had kind of told Mara Boxman, Winona's publicist, that, you know, I would hold off, I kind of had to think about it over the weekend because I didn't want to really set the cart with anything or anybody. But in the end, I decided, yeah, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. So I accepted the terms, and it was commissioned. And then 2 weeks before it was due to come out, and it was due to come out before Alien Resurrection, or with Alien Resurrection, because that was right. The whole point of the book, because we were covering her first 20 movies in her first 10 years. So this was a celebration of her 20th movie. And then 2 weeks before the book was due to come out, the Robert Smith's company, Smith Griffin, went into liquidation, and the book was cancelled. And obviously the Smith Griffin catalogue was put up for sale to various publishers. It then ended up finally with John Blake. And right. John's idea was to do a hardback in April 90, I think it would have been 97, April 98. And then Smith, who was W.H. Smith, who was the big bookseller at the time in this country, said they didn't want a paperback and they didn't want it in April. So they wanted a paperback in the following September, but no hardback. So what we were then given this extra time to, which was quite good really, because it gave me extra time to, you know, go back and rewrite certain passages and also update it all the time, which became a bit of a nightmare because at that particular point in her life, she was absolutely, you know, chronically busy, movie after movie after movie. So, and we got right up to, I think, you know, when she started dating Matt Damon, and that's right. Where the kind of book kind of, you know, kind of racked off, because we had a cutoff date. I think it was measurably July or August.
I remember when it came out in the 90s. I actually do, but I wasn't able to get a copy of it. I lived in Ottawa. There was no,
It wasn't in a bookstore?
Nah. But I remember, like, looking it up and, you know, trying to figure out how to get it. I didn't know.
I think it came out in the States in the November, so there was a kind of delay between the UK.
Right.
And I think what happened, they just literally shipped out copies to the US distributor.
Right.
So I think that's what happened. And then I don't know if you remember Eric Harshbarger's Winona Ryder site, which was an authorized website.
Which website was that? Like, what was the?
That was called the Winona Ryder site.
Okay.
And Eric actually got it authorized by Winona.
Oh.
But then I think it was, within a month of the book coming out, he closed it down because various things that were promised to him had never happened. And he felt that he had done all he could do with it. So,
right. That's why you might not remember it. 1 month.
And in 1998, of course, or when Eric was running the website, this was the kind of first celebrity website that had actually been authorized. So it was quite new. And I think that the publicists and the agents didn't actually get the potential of it. And yet today, celebrity websites are absolutely the in thing. Every celebrity has their own website, so and they're on social media. So
yeah, they're Twitter. Definitely on social media now.
They're definitely on Instagram and Twitter,
and wherever. So you have the ability to actually contact the celebrity, or at least write to the celebrity. Which back in the 90s, there wasn't any such thing, I don't think.
Well, I think the fan sites were more of a thing in the 90s. Like, definitely Rekha, participated.
Yeah, I was definitely in, I can't remember what it was called, but it was the one where, all the fans were on the one, and there was a message board, and there was so much activity in this message board. Like, people contributed to, buy her gifts and things like that.
Oh, yeah, I think that was the For Love of Noni, was that? I think that was...
For the Love of Noni, yeah, that sounds familiar.
And I think they collected for a birthday gift, and they collected or did a fundraising thing to buy her a watch.
Watch, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Rekha, you
and I've never heard that she actually received the watch.
I remember they posted a picture of her wearing. They think it was her wearing the watch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't know if that was.
True or not.
I didn't contribute, but I remember it was, they were taking collections
for the watch. Amazing.
Yeah. And I'm sure she did sent lots of gifts and things over the years. And, I think this was a kind of, a website, Winona website kind of gift to her. And, I mean, it was quite a good website as I remember. And there seemed to be a lot of them that came along after that time. But a lot of the research material that I was able to access came from Eric's site because he had all the articles. It was really a no-nonsense website. He didn't go into, the chitter-chatter or the rumours. So it was all, he had literally all the kind of articles that appeared in all the magazines.
It was like an archive or something.
Yeah, it was really, that was kind of a research gift. And then I was doing my own research by calling people in Petaluma and Hollywood. And we spoke to the Polyclass Foundation and the Petaluma Argus Courier, who turned around and completely surprised me and said, we have a picture of her taken in her classroom.
You described that in the book, and I wanted to know where you found that.
Yeah, well, the Petaluma Argus Courier, I became friends with a guy called Chris Sampson, who was the managing editor at that time. And I think he had taken the picture, or he had gone on the shoot, and they went up. It was around the time of Lucas, and they had gone up to the stall, and they literally... wanted to take a picture of her surrounded by her friends on the desk. And so they sent this picture to me, and I thought, this is truly amazing find. And that they sent me a batch of other photos. During the searches for Polyclass, there were some really nice ones. And there were also some other pictures of her that the Petaluma Argus Courier didn't take, but the San Francisco Chronicle did, of her lying on a railway track.
Okay, was that for something?
that was again to promote Lucas. We couldn't get the rights to use that photograph, so we said the school one was much nicer anyway, because it was really kind of cool, because nobody had ever seen a picture of Winona at that point. Mm-hmm. At that age, in her classroom, which I think that was taken at Petaluma Junior High. Not Kendall Worth, where you know she got beaten up and you know got kicked out and you know that's
right. That was before.
So by the time Lucas came out, she was you know at Petaluma Junior High, and I visited and when I went to Petaluma in 2002, I visited all these places, and you know, and it was very interesting because just before I arrived there, her whole house had actually been put up for sale, her family home, and we actually went and looked around that as well. So that was kind of
interesting timing.
Yeah, it was just so perfect timing because, and actually, for you know, because we always heard that. You know, they were very kind of a poor family and kind of from the whole hippie, you know, commune environment. Mm-hmm. It was actually quite a nice looking house. So it was nice to see. And it was nice. That trip in 2002 was really, I was just retreading the footsteps to see how much I had got right and what I'd got wrong.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say that was well after the book because the book came out in 98. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but I was there for 3 weeks, and I also went down to Hollywood, and I was taken around all the Winona sites, and I got shown some of her Oscar dresses, and, you know, it was an absolutely wonderful trip to go to these places, and that, I think at the time I was there, it was at the time of a whole shoplifting saga, so...
Oh, yeah, 2010.
She was, what I understand now, and I didn't know at the time, but she was actually, had gone back to live in Petaluma. So she was actually in Petaluma while I was there, but right. I know about that. Oh. So it was a great show.
Interesting. So you were doing some Winona tourism in 2010.
Yeah, I was just like, you know, and the people I stayed with, which was Chris from Petaluma Argus Crew and his wife, they took me around not only the Winona sites, but places around California and around Petaluma.
Interesting. So in your book, you know, talked about Winona as someone who really kind of like took hold of her career from an early age and chose roles that meant something to her. Do you think that she's been consistent with that after the time of your book? So like after 1998?
Yeah, I think so. I think she's very particular in what she chooses. I think she's very much a character actress. And it's a character that you know, makes her do a movie. Mm-hmm. She's not interested in box office, I don't think. Never has been. Her idea is that she likes acting. She loves acting. And it's the character that she's going to play that will kind of, you know, encourage her to do the movie. I mean, I guess that goes very much for Stranger Things. And mm-hmm. and I find that kind of, because when I wrote the book, she said in one interview that I was able to access, she said she would never do small TV screen work ever. And of course, you know, everything's now changed because of Netflix and the way we watch movies. And so I was quite surprised to see her do Stranger Things. But I actually thought her performance was, you know, absolutely splendid. And what was nice, it literally put her profile back on top where it should have been. I mean, Black Swan, we had a lot of rumours in the UK that was going to place her back, you know, high profile, and that she was going to be nominated for an Oscar, even though she, you know, she was only in the movie as more or less a cameo. But her performance in Black Swan was, again, absolutely marvellous. And again, I think she just chooses things that interest her. I don't think you'd find her doing, you know, action stuff. I suppose Alien Resurrection, again, although it's a big action movie, it's because she actually loved, you know, alien movies. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the appeal, and also the appeal to work with Sigourney Weaver. Even though it was quite terrifying to her because of the
underwater stuff.
Underwater stuff, mm-hmm. because of of her drowning experience when she was about 12 on Dillon Beach. She got caught under on a wave that pulled her out. And she was apparently, when the lifeguards dragged her in, she was technically dead, but they brought her back to life.
Whoa.
So ever since then, she'd never been in a swimming pool or certainly under water.
Yeah.
So, and there are lots of videos around of, you know, the crew from Alien Resurrection talking about that whole filming. And at the time, she said she actually asked the studio to, if they could, you know, get her a double to do the underwater stuff. But then she had her hair cut really short, and she realized that, you know, they couldn't get a double because...
Yeah, couldn't hide her under the hair or something. Yeah. Yeah.
So she realized she actually had to do it. And I've seen footage of her... rehearsing or practicing in the pool before they actually started shooting, and she just looks absolutely terrified. So I really do, you know,
shame feel for her.
Yeah.
It seems like too, it was like a scene that was so, like, there was so much action underwater, and it wasn't just like, you know, a scene where she had to be underwater. There's like a whole tank with a lid on it that mm-hmm. she's in. It just seemed terrifying in its own way, even for someone who wasn't scared of the water.
Yeah, and I mean, I think most of them, I think Sigourney Weaver was quite terrified of it as well. Mm. Because the way the tank was built, you couldn't just go straight up.
Right. Yeah, there was a lid.
You had to go through various ways to get up, and they had... safety divers.
They had like issue with, remember Ron Perlman hit his head and had to pull him out. Like, it was bad. It was a bad idea.
It was weirdly done, I guess.
And yeah. Everyone was like, how did they breathe for so long in that scene underwater?
Oh, yeah, just the scene.
The scene in general. Like, it was so ridiculous.
Because they swam for so long.
They swam for so long underwater. They would have all drowned.
In reality.
In reality.
Yeah, yeah. And then you've got the alien behind them. And there's a story that the alien, because they're basically guys in suits.
Right.
And the alien started to sink. The safety diver couldn't get to him quick enough. And the guy was sinking, and, you know, they said, cut, 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 you know, safety diver. And so they finally got to him okay. And but that was kind of a scary moment because, you know, and I think it became a bit of a joke because, oh, the alien is dying before he's killed anybody. You know?
Oh, my God. That's terrible. But, I don't understand why the guy in the suit couldn't have, like, an oxygen thing on.
A tank?
Like,
yeah,
that you wouldn't see. I guess maybe they were big.
I should think it's absolutely terrifying to film those sort of scenes. And that, I think they spent 2-3 weeks actually filming that. That was the very first thing they filmed for Alien, was the underwater stuff.
What a start.
And I think Winona at one point said, they're just going to have to replace me because I can't do this, which, you know, would be quite normal for anybody who is, you know, literally being sort of, you know, terrified of water in the way she was.
Mm-hmm.
Sigourney Weaver also went on camera, you know, on the extras, on the DVDs and stuff, saying that, you know, she was terrified as well. So, and I think they went through quite a lot of training to, you know, how to breathe and how to hold their breath. I wouldn't do it.
No, I wouldn't either, and I don't mind swimming.
Yeah, hell no, I don't.
Even if they say, you know, we've got a cameo for you with Winona in Alien,
yeah.
Like to go out of the water, I say no thanks.
Oh, I think I might do it.
That might be enough for Rekka.
They pay me millions, you know. Wait a minute. A few minutes underwater, sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, that film was one of the ones you focused on for this book because it was the newest film when you were writing it. Were there other films that you spent a lot of time with when you were writing the book?
I watched every film. Although I'd seen them in the cinema, I then got, of course, then it was VHS in 90, when I was writing a book. DVD hadn't come in. So I literally got hold of every VHS of every movie, and I watched everything all over again. And I also got sent some videos of her, or VHSs of her at the Oscars, in interviews, all sorts of kind of any footage you could imagine. I think I had a tape like 3 hours of stuff.
And like additional stuff. Did you have auditioning type things in there?
There wasn't much auditioning. Okay. But there, and later on, after the book came out, of course, she talked a lot more. And even now, she's going back talking about things that she did. I think when she did an audition with Brad Pitt at one point, which I think, well, I can't remember. It was one of the first films that she turned down, or that her parents weren't keen for her to do because it had a sex scene in it. I was quite amazed that Brad Pitt, she actually auditioned with an unknown Brad Pitt.
Which, do you know what film that was for?
He doesn't remember.
Oh, you don't remember.
I'll have to look it up.
And I'm so curious. Brad Pitt and Winona Ryder.
Really,
I know.
Right?
Potential.
Yeah. I think it was, you know, either it was, it must have been after Desert Bloom audition, which.
Oh, really early.
Yeah. So, you know, before she did Luke. So it was way back. And she talks about other things that I wrote about. A lot of them still, you know, much the same as I wrote in my book, which is nice.
That's good, yeah.
There are other things where she enlarges on something and, you know, makes it kind of, oh, she's changed that story. That was one of the things I used to find with all, when I was looking through all the interviews and reading them, from interview to interview, she could be quite contradictory in what she was saying. So in one interview, she would say something, and in the next interview, it would be quite the opposite. So I had to try and work out which is the best way to go. The whole idea of the book really was to not be my story of Winona. I really wanted it to be her story, and that's why it's heavily quoted. And I wanted readers to kind of make up their own mind about, you know, who she was, how she got there, et cetera, and how she became, you know, the great actress that she became. I read a lot of reviews of films as well, and I tried to pick out, you know, a very balanced view of the movies. But most of the movies were absolutely always greeted very well anyway. And, you know, even if her movies were bad or thought to be bad, she always, you know, she was always great in it. And that's what the general consensus was, I think. I mean, it's very difficult, I think, to pick, you know, a favourite movie. I mean, there are things like Great Balls of Fire, which I think is, you know, another incredible film, because I grew up with rock and roll music anyway, so that was particularly interesting to me. And although that got quite a bit of criticism because, you know, it wasn't particularly true to the story, I just thought it was a very well-produced film. And she was 17 at the time, to play a 13-year-old. I thought that was, she just brought that off so magically. And I think that's the thing about Winona. Whatever role she takes on, she literally becomes that person.
Do you remember the first Winona film you saw? Or like the one that was just like, you know, you're going about your day and then you see a Winona film and you're like, who is this person? I have to watch all their movies.
Well, Lucas, I saw and I found kind of interesting, but I guess it was when we got to Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
And Beetlejuice, I think I was married at the time, and I think I said to my wife, when we left the cinema, I said, that kid's going to be a star. And I made many predictions in my life about who's going to be a star and who's not. And the people I said were going to be stars never were. So it was nice when, I mean, it was pretty obvious to me, Beetlejuice was going to, you know, that was, to me, that was her launch pad into,
for sure,
into the higher kind of movies that she would take on then. And I think Beetlejuice certainly opened the doors for her to do, you know, the bigger movies. Although, you know, again, I suppose we could say that a lot of her movies are kind of, they're not necessarily big box office. They were kind of, you know, oddball movies, if you like. And, you know, like Johnny Depp's early movies were. And that what made them interesting, I think, because they chose such kind of unusual material and unusual stories and unusual films to do. Mm-hmm. They weren't bothered about the Hollywood ladder. I think it's kind of a shame, although Pirates of the Caribbean is very good, I think Pirates of the Caribbean actually changed, you know, how Johnny thought, because Johnny wasn't interested in Oscar nights or Hollywood or anything like that. He was very focused on doing, you know, quirky movies, if that's the right word. Mm-hmm. And I think Pirates of the Caribbean changed that because it became such a massive hit.
Whereas Winona doesn't seem like she's chosen things for commercial reasons.
No, and I'm sure Stranger Things has taken her completely by surprise. Mm-hmm. And I think she did that because she liked the story. I don't know when it was signed. I'm not sure.
It just seems like that whole show's made for her or made for me. But like,
yeah. Yeah, and the Stranger Things, I'm not sure if it was ever destined to go beyond one series, but yeah, I guess sure. Being so popular,
yeah,
it just, you know, took off. And season 3, as we all know, starts in July. Mm-hmm. So I will be binge watching again.
yeah,
same.
Yeah, no, it was really nice. It was really good to see her do that because she could have bypassed it. And, you know.
It was the Winona revival. Like, everyone was like, oh, she's back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ever since Black Swan, she was back and she was coming back and she was going to be bigger and better than ever. And, of course, it's always, this is Winona's comeback, and it never actually was.
Right.
And then when she did Stranger Things, they said the same thing, and people say, oh yeah, sure. And of course it actually turned out that it was her comeback because it proved to be such a success. Mm-hmm. And of course she got nominated for the Golden Globe, which I really thought she would walk away with. But then she was up against The Crown with Claire Foy, and that was another good, they were two really good series or two good films. Both The Crown and Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. And I think Netflix is really the new Hollywood. And I think we'll be seeing a lot more of Winona doing Netflix-type movies.
Perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, you see, like, in your book, you said that she didn't want to do TV. And I think that's probably true of a lot of, like, movie stars, that they just didn't see TV as something, like, it's more of a stepping stone mm-hmm. than something that gets you to movies. But now, with, like, HBO and Netflix and everything, there's so many more, like, filmic TV shows to do that you're getting, like, bigger stars in.
This Big
TV.
Little Lies show. I don't know what it is, but they're all in it.
Yep. I've seen Big Little Lies.
Movie actors.
Movie actors are in True Detective.
I also think that Stranger Things has actually made her a bigger star because television does that. Because if you didn't go to the movies, mm-hmm. you wouldn't necessarily know who Winona Ryder is. But now everybody knows who Winona Ryder is.
Yeah, it's a different audience.
Everybody's watching Stranger Things. Yes. I mean, it's become like a national obsession. Mm-hmm. Got to watch Stranger Things,
yeah.
Which is absolutely great. And obviously she's getting a lot of press in magazines, which is always nice to see.
I'm pretty sure she has, like, there's a Stranger Thing, like, there's, like, you know, action figures now, like, or what is it? What are those little funny things?
Pop Funko Pop. Dolls. Yeah.
There's a Winona Funko.
There is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They did actually, I never saw it, but they did a Mina doll for Dracula.
Oh, really?
That was, I think if you can find one, it's worth a lot of money. And because Dracula, I think I'm right in saying, was one of her biggest box office successes. And I was one of the people that loved that movie. Not everybody did.
True.
I thought it was very, very well stylized and very well done, as you would expect from Francis Ford Coppola. But we also know now that, you know, the hell that Winona went through making that film, you know, of being insulted and on set and everything else, you know, that I've detailed in the book.
Yeah, isn't that when, like, was it Keanu and Ford Coppola, they were yelling at her?
Yeah.
During that scene?
Yeah. And she didn't take to that very kindly.
No.
And
who would?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, she is totally responsible for bringing Dracula to the screen because of her dropping out of The Godfather Part 3, you know, due to health reasons. And she took the script to Coppola and said, she had a meeting with him, and then she just handed him the script on her way out and said, oh, this might interest you. And then he read it and he called her and said, definitely. And the deal was that she would play Mina. I think I think the way Coppola worked, you know, by insulting most of his cast to get to a certain point. And I don't think that any of them liked, certainly Anthony Hopkins, Keanu, Gary, and even Sadie Frost, they didn't like this whole rehearsal thing where they were all kind of, they spent weeks down at his wine ranch, you know, kind of bonding. And Winona said that was, you know, totally unusual and something that they weren't, she wasn't used to. And I remember seeing an interview with Anthony Hopkins saying that he doesn't like that type of thing because he just likes to go in, film, and leave, you know, that it's a job, you know.
Yeah, yeah, the social aspect of it I wouldn't like either.
Yeah, they try, and I read an article recently where Sadie was talking about this, and as soon as she arrived at the rehearsal ranch, she was told to call everybody by their characters' names. So she would go up to Winona and say, oh, hi, Mina, and me. And then Winona would call her her character name.
Huh. That's such a method actor thing. Like, if everybody's not a method actor, it's a weird scenario to be put in.
Yeah, you're like, oh, hey.
Yeah, and I don't think Winona liked method acting. And then she was told to, you know, she was, you know, all the etiquette and all that type of stuff that they went through, and the speech coaches that they had and how they meant to hold themselves. But I thought I thought the film generally was very good. And anytime it's on TV, I always watch it. And even if it's not on TV, I often dig
it up. So. Yeah. In our episode on it, we all also liked it. Mm-hmm. Though I know that a lot of people didn't at the time. It's a contentious one.
And I think she said I heard her on another podcast, and she said that she didn't like it at the time, but she was actually now reconsidering her view of it. And she was going to go back and take a look at it because the guy who was talking to her kind of convinced her that it was a great film.
Interesting. Cool.
Well,
yeah,
I think we should probably wrap up, but it was so lovely to hear from you.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out to us.
That's a pleasure. I'm always very, very happy to talk about Winona.
So are we.
That's why we're here.
She's still my favorite book. I've done 20 books and she's still the favorite one. So it's nice to be able to do this podcast with you guys and, you know,
get a chance to talk about her.
How long people hear it.
Yeah.
So that'll be very, very nice when it goes online. So I look forward to that.
Well, we'll let you know when it goes up.
Okay. Lovely to talk to you. And I will keep listening to your podcast.
Oh, and that was Nigel Goodall.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be mistaken for Jane Goodall. Okay, sorry. Well, that was quite an interview. Did you remember seeing any Winona websites in the 90s?
I don't think so. I don't know why.
Were you online in the 90s?
I was definitely online in the 90s at the end. So around the time this book came out, I guess, was like my, early days of me being online.
Okay.
I was making zines back then. So I think I was like just looking up stuff that I was writing about, like old cartoons. And I don't know. Nostalgia.
I think the internet was like, I used it so much to feed all my obsessions. And so I became so involved in like this Winona fan life. I was on that message board every day or what, I can't even remember the name of the site. I think Nigel brought it up, but I don't know if it was the same site, but we did have that similar story with the watch. Like I think I mentioned the watch. Everybody chipped in. So he knew about the watch too.
Mm-hmm.
So it must've been the same.
It was the tale of the internet at the time.
Chipping in for a watch.
That's amazing.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess that was sort of the purpose of the websites at the time was like just to create a sort of community of fans.
I mean, I think the last thing I recall doing on that message board before going, okay, I think I've you know, filled my quota here, was having an argument about like the new Star Wars episodes, like the prequels.
Okay.
I was defending them.
This was in a Winona message board?
Yeah, because there was like another like category that was just general movie talk. And of course I ended up there and I was just defending the Star Wars movies. And then I realized, I'm like, why am I putting all my energy into this message board?
Right.
Which...
That's usually everybody's
most people
experience
who's on a message,
board.
It's like, what am I doing?
I'm spending so much time arguing with strangers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still what the internet is today. A lot of people arguing with strangers.
I'll admit that we were kind of trolls before trolls had a word.
Okay.
We went to, and this is in high school. I think it was in high school. A Paula Abdul fan site message board.
Okay.
Oh, and we trolled it.
So you didn't like Paula Abdul?
I don't even know. Like, it wasn't even like we were strongly hated her, but I think she was becoming popular.
Wait, what? What years?
Maybe not. Maybe she wasn't becoming.
I was going to say the 80s
was
her popularity.
It was pre-American Idol. Because I know she went back for that, but it was before that.
Right.
I don't know what we were doing. We were just like making fun of her. And there was like very few Paula Abdul fans on the internet.
Sure.
The ones that were there were very strongly, like, you know, hated us.
Dedicated.
We were such jerks. But anyway, that was
what an interesting thing to choose. To
Paula
just
Abdul
be like,
trolling.
Let's
I remember like
Paula
babysitting, and my friend called me and goes, "Go on the Paula Abdul website right now. We've got some really funny things happening." And I was just like, "Paula Abdul eats babies."
Oh my gosh.
It was so weird. Oh god.
Interesting.
Anyway.
I feel like I was on a lot of like maybe Canadian indie band like sites. I think that's the only stuff I talked about online.
I also like hunted down like weird Winona clips and stuff. Like I have probably saved on some CD-ROM. I had a Winona folder and in it was like weird clips that I found. So the Japanese commercial she did for Cafe Latte. Have you ever seen those?
I don't think so.
Oh,
I see Chris nodding, so Chris is familiar with it.
I showed Chris.
Oh.
But she's just kind of like, you know, coming to her house with a cafe latte and throwing off her sweater. And this is like song goes, need to make the time, need some peace of mind. And then there's no, she doesn't speak or anything. And then it says something in Japanese and cafe latte. And then that's it.
Wow.
So she did a Japanese commercial.
So did Nicolas Cage. He did pachinko commercials. Oh. Sorry.
Pachinko.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. Celebrities doing commercials in Japan.
Yeah, it's a reality. It happens. Cool.
That was another weird. What other weird video things? I don't know. I just found. I sent it to you earlier. It was an audio clip of myself. I don't know what the hell it was for, but I'm like talking about all the stuff in my Winona Ryder Big Gulp, and it's really boring. And I sent it to my friend. I don't know what, where that came from,
or what she wanted it for.
No.
Huh.
And I called it Winona 1. So it was like there was going to be another.
Right.
Maybe it was my first attempt at a podcast.
So the Big Gulp cup holds like newspaper articles that
weird newspaper articles and clippings that I took, you know, from the 90s somewhere. Probably a lot of Entertainment Weekly.
Right.
Cuz we had a subscription to that. And what else? Like Rolling Stone or something.
That's awesome. I like that you still keep it in the Big Gulp cup.
Yep. And it's packed now.
Moving. Yeah. Moving.
Moving.
It's coming to the new house.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So, that's...
Winona in the 90s. That's pretty much what...
I know. And I mean, that's what he was talking about was mostly the 90s stuff. Yeah. I mean, he wrote his book, or it came out in 98. So that makes sense. But also... You know, when we asked him what his favorite movies were, there were a lot of early things. And I find that to be true whenever I talk to anybody about the fact that I'm doing this podcast. They're like, oh, I liked Heathers. Oh, I liked Lucas. Honestly, I had dinner with some friends the other night. And I was like, what's your favorite Winona movies? And she was like, Lucas. And I was like, what? I mean, that's like... She's like, oh, I guess I haven't seen it in a long time, so maybe it's Heathers. And I was like, okay. Because she's not really in Lucas very much. But... You know, that it depends on the time that you were like loving movies or like, you know, I don't know. It's a nostalgia thing too, I think.
Yeah. And then you have like, you know, the 25-year-olds who are like, who's Winona?
Yes.
Winona, you know, and they, you know, I have that Winona tattoo and some, you know, people
don't get it.
Don't get it. They don't get it. They don't know who Winona is. They are like, oh, the girl from Stranger Things. That's
right. I mean, we do talk about that with Nigel too.
Like, how people know her.
You jump all the way from the 90s to Stranger Things. And we're currently going through the time period in between.
Sometimes I'm like, did you ever see Black Swan? Did you ever see, you know, Star Trek? That one with
Winona. Oh, yeah.
But they haven't.
Right. Or she's such a small part of it that it's not remember. Like it doesn't stand out because I totally don't remember. I mean, I know that she was in Black Swan, but I can't place it. Oh. I don't remember her part.
I do because anyway, there's a fuller story to that. But yes,
we'll talk about it in Black Swan.
Save it. Black Swan. I will shut my mouth. Heathers. Anniversary time. 30 years of Heathers.
Anniversary right now. There's a lot of articles. We should share them on the internet.
Yes.
Have you been reading any of them?
No.
Me neither.
Chris sent one to me. I read part of it from the New Yorker.
Yeah.
But it's, you know.
It's just rehashing stuff that you already know.
We all know this.
That's probably why I haven't read it. I feel like we did all kinds of research at that. I mean, I read a whole book on Heathers when we were doing the Heathers episode. Well, I just feel like
Heathers.
But you know, it's nice to tip a hat to the 30th anniversary of Heathers. Yes. I actually did a tip hat motion even though nobody can see me.
And it's nice to know that, you know, even though this guy like Nigel has never really like, I mean, his work covers up until the 90s, he's still like a genuine Winona Ryder fan.
Yeah. He had stuff to say about
He didn't
the
have anything
stuff.
Negative to say about Winona Ryder at all.
True. He said that she continues to, you know, be true to herself in her choices, which I don't know. Like, I haven't analyzed the 2000s. I think when we get to the end of, like, when we get to, like, 2010-ish, we can have a sort of reflection on what was happening in the 2000s and see. I don't disagree. I think that she is choosing things for a reason. I just can't figure out what the reason is. Or like what she, maybe she, I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much, but like, I feel like
we should have maybe her on she the doesn't. Show.
There you go. That would help. But I do wonder if like in the 90s, she had like, you know, a certain personality that she wanted to like, she was, what am I trying to say? Like she was attracted to certain things that were like weirdo high school, like that kind of thing.
And then she wanted to kind of grow up out of that role. But exactly. I think that what, you know, Hollywood is like really impossible to get like really good roles for women just generally.
That, and I think you're in your 20s, you don't like, I don't know about you, but in my 20s, that was like the most finding myself kind of time of my life where I really didn't have an identity. Like I had one in high school, and I think once I turned like got over 30, I like settled into myself a bit better. But in my 20s, I might have, you know what I mean? Like, I just think that
she's still trying to figure out shit.
It is still kind of a what are you doing kind of moment.
And maybe in her 30s, she kind of just took some time and was like, okay, maybe I got to reevaluate what I'm doing here.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know.
And then she took like very small roles. So she wasn't, you know, and I know that she focused a lot on fashion and she went to a lot of fashion shows. And I actually think she did.
Is she with a fashion designer now? Is that her partner?
Yeah. She worked with Marc Jacobs after the shoplifting incident.
Right.
Something else. Did she work? She might have done some. This is, I don't know what date this was, but there was Vagina Monologue stuff.
Oh, yeah. I saw. Where did I see that listed? I think in the back of Nigel's book, it lists like other things that she did. And I feel like that was listed there.
Yes. She was involved in that with the late Brittany Murphy.
Hmm.
I'm pretty sure. So that, that's been the early 2000s.
Yeah, so maybe she's just experimenting in this time and we're just not loving what she's been in as part of her experiment.
Yeah, I mean, you're 13 years old, you're told this is your career for your whole life. Maybe she wanted to, like,
try something different.
Yeah, or, well, just, also, or just be, like, quiet and not act, you know? Like, why? Why
do other things.
Do other things.
Sure.
Sure.
That seems reasonable to assume. All right. Cool. Well, thanks for joining us for this special episode.
Stay tuned next time for another installment of Winona Forever.
The Last Word is the next episode.
The Last Word.
And that's 2008.
Okay.
Whew, she's got a couple more in 2008, some in 2000, a lot in 2009. Then Black Swan is 2010. So I feel like that's the time that to look at if there's a transition into the next decade. I don't know. Yes. We can reevaluate the 2000s then. We can really think about what's been going on when we get to Black Swan.
We'll
Cool. So The Last Word next week. Next two weeks.
Wednesday.
Yeah. Sweet.
Winona Forever is part of the Cage Club Podcast Network. Episodes produced by Chris Landry. Music by No Refunds. Hosted by Lindsay Gibb and Rekha Tulsaram. Contact Rekha and Lindsay at winona@cageclub.me.